Sorry, Such Out, and welcome for another recording for another episode. This episode will be the fourth today, and we will be recording episode 145, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm mistaken, people will forgive me. So 145, 146, who's counting? I appreciate the listeners tuning in. If you're coming in on the audio channels, or are you coming in on, if you're coming in on the YouTube channel, thank you very much for following us. Thank you for counting us amongst your podcast listeners channels. So that'd be good. And today I have the honor and the distinct pleasure to have with me Nikki Barua. Nikki Barua is joining me from the US, from Texas, I believe. And we have two objectives for our conversation, Nikki, today. One is I can't wait, and the listener can't wait to get to know you, because everybody who came on this channel here had a story. And when we get this conversation started, I normally ask people, tell us your story. So everybody's got one. And I'm not looking for any, you know, oh my God, you know, I cured this and I moved this. No, I'm just, people have normal stories and they're fine and I love them all. So the microphone is off to you. What is your story? Why don't we start with that?
Well, thanks for inviting me to your show, Robin. Pleasure to be here. First of all, I'd say the through line of my story has been all about adapting to change and reinventing myself over and over again. And through every part of my journey, it's really been about encountering challenges and turning those obstacles into opportunities, whether it was, you know, growing up in India at a time when there were very limited resources and all of the big dreams that I had, I believe that America was the place where they'll come true. So, you know, in my early 20s, left my home and the only place I'd ever known and made my way to the US and had to reinvent myself completely because it was a totally unfamiliar place and a culture that I didn't know anything about, to entering the workforce and learning all about corporate America and rising up the ranks through that, of needing to constantly reinvent, learning about leadership and learning about business, navigating through so many ups and downs through that, to walking away from my corporate career at the height of it to become an entrepreneur 15 years ago and building various businesses. And like every business owner knows, there are more tough days than good days. And it's all about the one that still remains still standing. So I'm now in the process of building my fourth company. And yet again, reinvention is right here because AI has changed the world as we know it.
And you know what? There are many points in that intro that sticks with me. One is leaving your career at the height of your career. That's exactly what I did 8 weeks ago. I started my own company eight weeks ago. It's called N49 Networks Advisory Group on go-to-market issues, revenue generation, etc. So, and it's fun, to be honest with you. It's very much fun. And I'm enjoying it so much that I wish, I look back and I wish I've done this long time ago, to be honest with you. It feels different. And I know, I mean, not all days are good days. And, you know, the world is not flat, as many people would think. We have ups and downs and everything in life. I'm realist to understand that. But I do like, though, I don't know if you appreciate that as well. I think you do, because of the reinvention in your monologue earlier, like the opportunity to control your destiny, the opportunity to put forth ideas that you believe in. You know, I looked at your profile on LinkedIn and I looked at how many initiatives you're involved in. Flipwork is one of them, which we'll get to know a little bit here in the conversation. It talks to the individual person who you are as a character. And I'm like you. I left the country that I was born in, Lebanon, at the age of a little less than 20. I think it was like 18 or something. And I ventured into many countries before I arrived back into Canada here. And I've been, no, I mean, I came to this country like everybody else with, you know, empty pockets and a head full of dreams.
That's right.
And, you know, you put it into context of things where we are, where I am right now, where my family that came with me, where they are right now. And it feels like it's okay. It's not bad. You know, even if I would have stayed back where I came from, world would not going to be easy anyways. Yeah. There's a little bit more resources here to work with, and you can attest to that. But it's a learning process altogether.
Yeah, I mean, it really unlocks your resilience and adaptability.
Yes.
There is no choice. I mean, when you leave what's familiar and what's safe and what's comfortable, the only way to survive is when you just simply take on every challenge and as a reason to grow into the next version of you. and you remain resilient through all of the struggles in that process. But that's what entrepreneurship is like as well. I mean, that's why so many immigrants go into entrepreneurship, because they can relate to it, as it brings about the same qualities and the same attributes that you need to be successful, which is, can you live to fight another day?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
you have the power to define your own destiny, but it also means you are 100% accountable for every outcome as well. There's no one else to blame. There's no boss to blame. There's no society or policy to explain any of your successes or failures. It's all in your hands. And that's both liberating and terrifying at the same time.
So let's talk a little bit of Flipwork. And before we get there, I think let's walk through the journey, how you got to Flipwork.
Yeah.
You know, through your leadership in transformation, human reinvention, and specifically now AI-enabled workforce, which is everybody keeps talking about. I think by the end of today, after so many podcasts I've recorded today, I'm getting AI fatigue a little bit, but that's okay. I can manage this one. Walk us through what transpired to get you here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I started my early career in the space of strategy and innovation. And it was really about helping big companies go to market faster. And I still always say I'm in the business of making elephants run. You know, big companies have a ton of resources, but they're really slow. And that's where startups have an advantage, because they're, you know, a lot faster to get products out to market, making faster decisions and operating cycles and all of that. And having done that kind of work for, you know, a couple of decades, both in my corporate career as well as an entrepreneur, building those capabilities for companies, all that change management work, the digital transformation work, as I looked at what was happening with AI sort of transforming the world as we know it, one of the things became clear is that change management also has to change. Traditional change management was top down, outside in. It was very episodic, like a start end date for the project. And it was mostly focused on automation and processes and tools and things like that. It rarely focused on the people side of things. What's different now is that if you're just plugging in technology and yet people are operating with outdated habits and mindsets, you're not going to get the leverage and the value of what the technology brings. So you have to start with helping people reinvent first, and then help teams reinvent how they work, and only then figure out the right place for automation to exist. And that was, you know, having been deep in this space for such a long time, it was very clear to me what was not going to work. But as I looked at the available solutions, it was also clear that there weren't a lot of transformative solutions that focused on the human side of AI. And that was the origin story of Flipwork, is ultimately you got to flip the old way and you got to embrace the new way. And that requires people to shift their identity. And that's not an easy thing to do, because that's got nothing to do with technology. It's got nothing to do with AI. It really comes down to something that's a core human transformation that is required.
And it's pretty much adaptability to new, whatever it is, new tools, new technology. And it sounds like from everybody I talk to, I don't know why, because over the past 3-4 decades, we've introduced to society many techs. I mean, some of it was very, very disruptive. I mean, I would remember times when you would call somebody and say, go to the ATM machine and get me some money, and people will freak out. You think I'm going to go to an ATM machine and get money out of the machine? Like, how does that work? And we've gone over that. Like, we've gotten over it. It's over now. It's just typical people do these things. But this one, with this type of technology, I'm noticing a more transformative reaction or more in-depth reaction from people on it. And I don't know if it's mixed emotion between I'm scared of losing my job versus I don't know if this is going to replace me, or we've watched too many Star Trek movies, one or the other. I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, look, what's different this time is the speed and scale of how fast the technology is evolving and how quickly it's being adopted and gaining mass adoption. That was not the case with previous tech revolutions. There was always a longer time span.
Correct.
Before it became, you know, globally adopted. I mean, look at the
internet. We're given time to absorb it, right, Nikki?
Exactly. The stomach for change, there was more time. And frankly, even if you didn't adopt it, you think back to the dot-com days, right? Even if you were not embracing the internet, you could still have a viable business. You could still have a brick and mortar shop and do business. It wasn't the end of the world. Over time, it became the global standard. Same thing with mobile, when mobile came about and there were options there. What's different now is that within a month, when there's 100 million people adopting this technology and it's evolving so fast, that is an unnatural pace for human beings to adapt to. So that the speed and scale is one thing that's different. The other thing is in previous technologies, we had to learn the technology. You know, we had to learn how to use something. This, we're not just learning it, but we're also teaching it. And so now it becomes about what you get out of it is what you put into it. That means you got to change your relationship with the technology. And the better your inputs, the better your outputs. And that's not something that's been the case before. And then finally, in its evolution, there's so much that is going to race ahead of where people can be that there is absolutely truth in the idea that it will replace people's jobs. But it's also going to create a ton more new jobs, but they won't require the same kind of skills. So the question is, yes, you may lose your job. There's no guarantee that you're going to get that same job back, but it's for you to upskill, reskill, figure out how you're going to create value in this new world.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you bring a very valid point, like the type of technology and where we are as a humanity are completely different. And, you know, we're teaching it at the same time we're learning it and all that stuff. But I also believe that the generation that we're working with right now, the new graduates, the young kids are going to school, the one they're, you know, entering the workforce recently, they're not the same workforce that entered, not same people that entered the workforce 20, 30 years ago, right? So we've taught them, they went to school, they studied the new way, the new technology, the new tradition, the new way you work with tech, and that whole idea of adaptability, agile development. I've heard about this like 20, 30 years ago, that we need to be agile. Nothing is sticking around anyway. So we either move with time, and you're a big evidence for that, or we get left behind.
Yeah. Well, you know, I speak at a lot of universities, and one of the things I've heard consistently from students across the board lately is there's a lot of fear and hopelessness. They're really concerned about what happens when they graduate. Are there going to be jobs? What do those jobs even look like? Are they going to be able to build the skills? Will they have mentors? Will there be apprenticeship? You know, how are they going to build their careers when it seems like AI is taking over everything, especially entry level? Right? Because that's used to be a lot of grunt work that, you know, machines can do better, faster. And so companies are actually hiring fewer people at early entry level jobs. So what does that mean for someone graduating college? And my advice to them has been basically focus on building the skills that only humans can do, that machines will not replace, you know, the relationship building skills, creativity, decision-making, insight, perspective, like those kind of things you're always going to need. But while you're doing that, make sure you understand how you can partner and co-create with AI instead of just doing that. Like learn that, gain that fluency of building and co-creating with AI. And finally, the third most important thing is everything is going to change so fast that no matter what you know, it's going to become obsolete in no time. So the meta skill you need to master is the skill of learning. Because if you know how to learn and you are better at learning things faster than anyone else, you win the race.
Absolutely. Now let's talk a bit about what Flipwork is and what does it do? What problem does it solve? How do people use it now if it's being used? Or we'll get to know the stage of development you are, commercialization, et cetera. Let's get started with get to know Flipwork a little bit.
Yeah. So Flipworks is in the business of helping companies reinvent their people, process, and tools for the AI age. And fundamentally, it's solving the problem that AI is changing work faster than people can change how they work. You know, and because of that, there's this gap that happens where the technology is deployed in these companies, but they're not being used or they're not being used appropriately to get the real ROI from these. And that's the gap of human capability. So the approach we bring to our clients, and we work with enterprise clients, and our focus is on helping them reinvent every 90 days. So all the work that we do happens in 90-day sprints. And during that 90-day sprint, we do the reinvention in three parts. We first start with the people and helping every individual reinvent how they think, how they decide, how they work, all of that at an individual level. And it's really identifying what parts of yourself do you need to shed? What is the new set of skills and approaches that you need to build where you're leading with your unique zone of genius instead of competing with the machine and unwilling to shed? And you know what, Robin, when it comes to that kind of process, what we've discovered is a lot of the conditioning and people's beliefs and value system start to get in the way. Because, for example, if you derive your sense of worth from hard work and effort, and you say, you know what, I was taught that I need to come in and work hard and be the first in and last out. Now suddenly, AI can do your job and you're done in minutes. Well, so you're actually, you end up resisting that, not because you are a technophobe, you resist that because it clashes with your conditioning and your core values. So those are the kind of shifts we help the individuals make. Once that done, the second part of it is we work with teams to completely redefine their processes and their workflows. So many of the workflows were designed for an old era where it was much more manual, much more, you know, a lot slower, a lot more bloated. How can you redefine that, you know, in the context of AI? And then finally, once that's done, then we do the system integration of bringing in the tools and the AI agents that can speed up the process. So all of that happens in a 90-day cycle. So each of the teams kind of go through this 90-day cycle and this rapid reinvention that releases not just efficiencies, but really leads to profit gains very quickly.
So Nikki, can we say consultation first and solution after?
It's people first, technology after.
Yeah, so you study the situation first.
Right, yeah. And the approach that, you know, our system is an agentic system. So think of it like Grammarly, you know, that works alongside you and your flow. So this is our agentic system. You know, it's not just guiding people through the process, but it also is, you know, providing the interventions and nudges in context of their workflow. But the point is about companies not just throwing technology at a problem, but really focusing on how to empower and advance their people first.
How do you think people are reacting to your solutions? Is there a case of, here's the return on investment, we've improved by X, mm-hmm. we shed cost, we improve the bottom line, the team is doing better. And the worry that is most teams are worried about is, did we have to fire anybody in the process?
Yeah. Yeah. So when we work with clients, we first start with a diagnostic that it's a proprietary diagnostic that kind of measures the current baseline of where are they, where are their people, where are their processes, where the level of automation that they have. And so that gives us a sense of where the real gaps and opportunities are. And what we found is, you know, at the end of 90 days, when we use this diagnostic again, we see an 80% improvement consistently, at least a minimum of 80% transformation in that, meaning that the people feel more empowered and aligned. Teams have completely redone, you know, their processes, and there's a lot more adoption of the tools and usage. Depending on the functional area that we work with, a couple of examples that I'll give is whether it was a sales team that kind of went through this process and they were able to speed up not only their entire end-to-end sales pipeline because they were able to reinvent that and leverage tools, but the volume of what they were able to handle dramatically increased with the same headcount. And that ability to increase your revenue, because without adding more cost to the sales department and actually handle a ton more deal flow or a ton more, you know, client management, that's game changing. Same thing with an engineering department that we work with, where it was interesting how these are engineers that were struggling with the adoption of a lot of the coding tools because it made them feel less valued. But because we started with the people part, there was an aha moment that they go through where they're like, oh, wait, this is actually empowering me to discover ways of innovating instead of someone from the outside, some expensive consultant coming in and deciding to fire me and replace me. And I didn't even have a chance at optimizing what I do, mm-hmm. right? Of how I could shed things that are tactical, repetitive, or pattern driven that AI can do and how I can move to higher value tasks. So with that, when they go through that sort of self-discovery and the empowerment that, you know what, this is not about replacing, this is actually giving me the power to figure it out myself. And through that, I can actually move to higher value tasks. I can move to focusing more on relationship building or client management and problem solving and decision making and things like that instead of the grunt work that was taking up so much of my time. So the shift in first, there's capacity that gets released, and then they get to then deploy that release capacity into higher value tasks. And by that, basically making themselves more valuable. So we see it as a way to actually preserve jobs and move people into becoming more valuable, and at the same time driving grassroots innovation across an organization.
And based on what you've dealt with, what is some of the pushbacks, I guess, that you've encountered that at the end of the day, it turned out to be maybe valid, maybe not, but you've dealt with it?
Yeah. So a few things. Well, first of all, I'd say most of the pushback actually comes from more of the senior leaders, not from the grassroots employees, which has been interesting because we initially, our hypothesis was that there might be some resistance about, well, why is this asking me to, like, I've been doing this job for 15 years. Why is it asking me to, like, rethink everything? I mean, I'm doing just fine. So, but that's not what happened. I mean, the people on the ground actually are pretty excited and feel very empowered and happy about it. Pushback is initially from the leaders. Who the few concerns that they have is, does this mean that we're going to have shadow AI everywhere? Because everybody is going to kind of now get so comfortable that they're going to start building their own AI agents or start using all kinds of tools that we've not actually approved or have any kind of governance or policy around. That's one concern. The other one is, what if this just allows people to work less, still collect the same paycheck, and there's no tangible improvement in productivity or speed or any like business outcomes? And the third is, their own discomfort around, what does this mean for this future of where are we going to have humans and machines on teams, and lack of readiness around that?
So, as you're talking through this, the software industry is one of the largest in the world. Like, trillions of dollars are being spent on software. Mm-hmm. As you're going through the process of transformation with some of your customers, do you ever think that the software industry, in comparison to the AI revolution, that the software industry will become obsolete at some point?
Well, certainly SaaS in its current form is going to have to change pretty dramatically. I see a lot more combination of professional services and technology kind of fusing together, because they're ultimately about just solving real problems. And so some of the standardized software that has existed, we're going to see evolution. I mean, the bigger ones are obviously even now a very rapidly evolving their offerings and their pricing model. I think we're going to see it shift from seat-based pricing to outcome-based pricing. And that's a good thing for everybody. What I do see is a lot more monopolistic companies that keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger that are going to gobble up a lot of the others, where you're, for a startup, your entire product could just be a feature addition for one of the bigger players. So you may not live.
You got diluted pretty quickly.
You got diluted pretty quickly. I mean, there was a time where you could start a company and it could exist for 10 years and you could IPO or you could have some kind of meaningful exit. Now it's just either a talent acquisition play. If your team's strong, you get acquired, acquihired for that, or your product is eliminated from the competition, bought out because they want to eliminate it, or it just becomes a tiny feature on a bigger stack. So I think the lifespan of startups, we're going to probably see it shrink.
Shrink in the software sector, right?
And the other reason is also AI is very infrastructure dependent, right? Because the electricity requirements, the water requirements, chips, all of those things, that if you are not able to get those resources and you can raise capital, for example, because there's some companies that are growing at insane rates and the others have mediocre growth rates in comparison, that's going to affect your ability to raise capital. If you can't raise capital, you're not going to get access to the resources and infrastructure that you need, in which case you just basically run out of steam. So I think one reason is resource constraints, and the other is that the bigger players are likely to gobble up faster.
Now, putting the resource issues aside, and we all know that AI is on a fast pace of evolution. As you know, you wake up in the morning, every morning you read the headlines, something new happening in AI, right? It's not. It's one thing that is constant is the complete changes that we've seen in AI to the better every single day that this is happening, versus a software, which we normally... You know, for those who use software from our audience, as you know, you download a software, you buy it, you download it, and you wait for the next feature to be added or the next revision to be sold to you as an upgrade down the road a year later or something, you know, version 1.1, 1.2, all that stuff. Mm-hmm, yeah. With AI, we skipped all that. And we embedded the evolution inside the core technology, which now you don't have to buy it. It's just continuously evolving and adapting. And we're still at the early stage. I mean, AGI is still at the, you know, we haven't done that. And ASI, I guess that's the big scare that everybody keeps waiting for. And you're right, computing, and I'm not sure, computer resources is a major issue. I'm not sure if you faced that. I was doing a conversation in Montreal, when was that? Not too, last April, I think. We're doing a panel discussion, and a professor at the University of McGill stood up and says, I am totally against AI. I said, explain, why is that? She said, well, it's environmentally not friendly, and we're using energy and resources in a not in a so environmental, you know, consciousness, if you will. Now, there is that side of the discussion that probably, in addition to resources, people are going to be talking about, and it's coming up because of the requirement of resources that this technology is demanding. And you're right, it could put a stop a little bit on, or slow down a little bit on how we progress. But when you listen to the CEO of NVIDIA and all these guys, they seem to be very confident that we are going to get the resources. I don't know, maybe they have some stock in the market for that. I have no clue.
Well, my take on it is this. I mean, if you look back throughout human history, there's always been a fear of something that we would run out of or not be able to solve.
Yeah.
And yet the thing that has helped through all of those twists and turns is the human ingenuity to solve each of these problems. I mean, you know, there were every kind of thing that we face, we've come up with a solution for it. And yes, right now, if you look at, you know, power and sustainability from a current state lens, it might feel like, wow, this is, you know, going off the deep end. I mean, we're destroying the planet because AI usage is just going to consume so much energy and resources that we're destroying the planet. But by the same token, we now have human ingenuity plus infinite intelligence to solve that exact same problem. So I'm pretty optimistic that, yes, it may not look like a negative in the short term, but I'm also confident a solution will emerge that will help us transcend that.
I think as a humanity, we love soap opera. And that's, that's my theory on this. We love to dramatize everything. But you're right. Give me a problem, I'll give you a solution. That's what the humanity story has been since the evolution of time, I guess.
And we also keep adapting. So it's not just that we solve problem, but we also learn how to live with a new reality as well. I think that's all, you know, so right now the fear is, okay, it's destroying the planet and it's taking away jobs. Well, the solution may be that AI will find a solution to the risk to the planet and actually solve it better and faster than we ever could before. And as far as jobs, it will create new kind of jobs that elevate humanity to, you know, more away from the industrial age type of work and to higher value activity. And all of those things are good outcomes.
Nikki, how do customers get engaged with you on Flipworks? How do they let's get started kind of an arrangement?
Yeah, I mean, we typically start off with senior leaders in the company that, you know, understanding what their readiness and their real challenges are. And the first thing we urge them to think about is stop thinking about the shiny object syndrome of looking at AI. Don't chase the licenses and the tools. Really understand what is the most important business problem that you're focused on right now. And let's start with that. Contextualize the value of AI and your people and processes evolving to solve that better, faster, cheaper, right? And so be clear about that problem. So the initial engagement really starts from helping them gain that kind of clarity and then contextualizing how we can get that in 90-day cycles. And from there, that's where the journey begins.
And the best way to reach Flipworks is through your website, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
You personally?
Flipwork.ai. Yeah, flipwork.ai.
Yeah, and on a separate note, which industries are you more focused on? What segment of the businesses are you focused on? Small to medium, large, Fortune 500? What are you aiming at?
Yeah, mostly we focus on companies above 1,000 people. The headcount matters because that's where you start to get real efficiencies and real profit gains. Our customers kind of range either in Fortune 500 or sort of the upper mid-market range. And in terms of industries, we're really focusing on the ones that are more legacy industries that are complex, you know, whether it's financial services, healthcare, manufacturing, logistics, where the application of AI has real benefits, not just superficial sort of automation, mm-hmm. the complexities that are there to solve, and that is where the real value gets unleashed.
Absolutely. Now, let's switch gears a little bit. I know, well, actually reading your bio and reading a little bit about you online here, you are an interim president or interim CEO for Latinas in Tech.
I was. I completed that.
Are you
that
still there? Or
No, not anymore. Yeah, okay. That was a...
What's the story there?
So interesting story was that, you know, this was where I was still in the process of building Flipwork and looking at, you know, where to launch it and testing that out. And the board of the organization approached me about stepping in because the founder and CEO had a medical emergency and they needed someone who was a highly experienced CEO and a turnaround expert. And my response to them was, well, I'm not a Latina, number one. And number two, I've never worked a nonprofit. And number three, I'm already building a tech startup. But it was, you know, really a call to step into the moment of an organization that needed leadership and I could apply my skills. And I'm so grateful for that opportunity because not only did it teach me a lot and help literally thousands of young tech professionals across the globe gain perspective, but it also showed me how to lead in a crisis really well.
Absolutely. And you're also a keynote author and a leadership expert. So on the keynote side, how's that going? Do you like, is there like a specific events you did TED Talks? Is that which category of events do you feature in?
Really all over the world. The focus has been in sort of my core signature keynote has been about reinvention. And whether it was my early keynote used to be about survival of the fastest, how do you adapt to change? That it's not just about being fit, it's about being fast. And I've been fortunate to speak on many stages, whether they're tech conferences or industry trade shows for various industries, as well as corporate events and so forth. And so my entire focus as a keynote speaker is I have one goal every time, which is I need to move people to action. If all they do is feel inspired by my story or by message, and they're leaning back and doing nothing about it and going back to their day jobs, that's a loss. So my focus is on very actionable strategies that moves people to action.
Absolutely. You want to get them out of the conversation with some notes to go do something.
Do something. Absolutely. Because life changes only when you take action. If you simply are in the business of consuming, where you read a ton of books or take a bunch of courses and you change absolutely nothing, that's not where progress happens.
So a few quick questions for you. What excites you the most about the next few years, Nikki?
The ability to lead with curiosity and really become an explorer. It's not about the expertise you hold. It's how you lead, go through all of the uncertainty as an explorer.
100%. And what opportunities do you think still underappreciated?
I think we're going to see a lot of the trades and blue collar jobs and skill, those kind of vocational skills really grow in demand. I mean, you think about if there's AI sucking up so much power, think about, you know, if you're an electrician or, you know, a HVAC, those are things that the trades are really going to grow in demand. So that's, I don't think there's enough recognition of how much opportunity there'll be in that.
Absolutely. And what do you hope will change in how leaders approach human potential by 2030?
I hope there's very intentional design around how we truly unlock human potential, because for the first time in modern human history, we have the power of technology to unlock and amplify what makes us truly human. We have the ability to be exponentially capable by co-creating with AI, but leaders have to look at it as a positive and intentionally invest and design it that way instead of simply plugging in the technology and hoping it changes the world. I believe that the greatest technology on planet Earth is still the human being.
What is the one message you want the listeners to take away from this conversation? What would you like them to take away from this dialogue with me?
I hope that everyone takes away that reinvention is a necessary capability now for everyone. It's not optional anymore. The cycles are too fast and too disruptive to think that what got you here is still going to get you there. So make that part of your identity, that you are constantly willing to shed who you used to be and step into who you need to become.
And this is not age dependent, I'm assuming. You're talking to all age categories.
Indeed. In fact, even more so, right? Because I speak to so many executives that are at the peak of their career And, you know, being willing to shed status, hierarchy, title, all the things that gave you power and be a rookie again, that's not an easy thing to do, but it's a necessary thing to do.
You know what, Bob? As I wrap this conversation, I feel like I can talk to you for hours. This is a brilliant conversation. You know, describer of what you do and how you do it and the history that you bring to the conversation and the colors that you add to every topic is amazing. So I want to thank you for this, Nikki. I really appreciate it. And just to know, you know, just to see if I can repeat what you do, what Flipworks does, so I can feel like the audience, you know, Robin was listening in, I guess. And just you know, score me on, you know, if I make a mistake, forgive me, that kind of thing. So Flipworks is a company that goes to your business, give them 90 days, and within the 90 days, they reinvent your business processes. They validate what you're doing well, what you're not doing well that you need to fix. And after the 90 days, within those 90 days, they start bringing in solutions to fix that. And it's all about adoption of AI, how you're using AI, not to be scared for using AI, elevate yourself as an individual and move your skills to the next level so you don't end up in the hamster wheel doing the same thing repeatedly day in, day out. Elevate your skills to do more valuable things in your career. Did I capture that?
You're hot. I love it. Well done. Look, you know, bottom line, it's about making every human being exponentially capable. It's not about AI adoption. It's about making us greater because we already have limitless potential. It's just about bringing that out in every workplace.
And there's a lot of room for us to learn here. We're still at the front end of this, I feel like, from based on the conversation I have with people. We're still on the front end of this. There's a lot of learning to be done. There's a lot of potential out there. There's a lot of people that can move the needle in their own career or in their businesses where they work. And they're just, it's an unrealized human capital intelligence, I would say, in my mind.
Yeah, that's really well put because it's, you know, we all now have a blank canvas by which we can paint a picture and become anything we or solve any problem we want to because we have infinite intelligence and power at our disposal. The only thing that's going to limit what you're able to achieve is your own imagination. And that's pretty incredible.
True.
It's elevating us to be imagineers.
100%. So as we wrap this conversation, any last comments?
Well, I hope that everyone takes away that the future is actually pretty bright and the best way to win is to lead with what makes you uniquely you.
So yeah, basically saying, don't be afraid, hold my hands and let's jump together. So it's pretty cool. Exactly. I really like that.
Yeah, exactly right.
Nikki Barua, thank you so much for joining me today on this recording of this episode. I really appreciate it. Me, on behalf of myself, the listeners of the Localization Fireside Chat, we thank you so much for being here. And I hope you
thank
come
you
back and visit
me
us once in a while. You know, this channel have always been accommodating in terms of welcoming innovators such as yourself, movers and shakers of the business. We just published an episode that was completely recorded in Spanish out of Argentina. This was a flagship for us where the guest was the first female that is now the CEO of Ecogas, which is one of the largest companies in Argentina. It was a great thing to celebrate. I always love to do these kinds of events globally, locally, it doesn't matter. So basically the end of this is feel free to come back.
Wow, it would be my honor. Thank you for saying that, Robin.
And for the audience, I really thank you so much for listening in. If you're coming in on the audio podcast channels, thanks for listening in. And if you're watching us on YouTube, thanks for watching. And if you have any ideas for future shows, for future episodes, please keep them coming. Not that I need to record more episodes, but if you have any ideas for episodes, please do send them through. I really enjoy these conversations personally. The audience love to listen to this. And again, 1,200 downloads a day, they're, you know, for a small, specific channel, it's quite the achievement. So I'm happy with this. So thanks so much for everybody. Thanks for Nikki for joining me. And thanks for the audience. Appreciate it. I'll see you at the next episode.